This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Welcome in. Flagtober 2024 starts at Firewheel Whataburger Saturday morning at 9 a.m. We'll make a big old loop around DFW, handing out free flags at every stop. It goes until 6:30 in Grand Prairie, and you can get the whole schedule right now, 105throughthefan.com/events. We have John Owning Pro Football Focus coming up here in 20 minutes. Time now for your NFL news of the day. Here's Chief.
You know, there's a lot of metrics that you could look at to help defend Dak right now. And really, the Dak defenders should have this one in their back pocket. We know the average separation is very, very poor with these wide receivers. We know that there's no rushing attack to speak of. We know that the defense is absolutely embarrassing. And so Dak not getting much help. I mean, I can't help but look at different scenarios around the sport and just continue to be reminded how much coaching actually matters and how much guys are being helped from the sideline. Are there coaches just out there saying, man, if I have great players, then we can win. But if I don't have great players, then we're screwed. Then what are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing then?
Join the club.
What's your role here? Yes, I would imagine there's a lot of guys out there that can stand on the sidelines of winning football teams that have dominant rosters from top to bottom. Sure, dude. You know, and that Jason Garrett loved to do that. You know, next man up. Just, you know, it doesn't matter. Chaz Green, I know you're not Tyron Smith, but you're next man up. So we're not going to change anything about the way we call offense here. You just have to emulate a Hall of Fame tackle. Because that's all I know how to do as a coach is just to tell you to go be Tyron Smith, even though you're Chaz Green. And that's just an extreme example of what a coach that isn't very good would do. And so right now, Broadus and Bobby did some of the research on this.
Yeah.
The first 15 plays stood out to you. It's like, man, these scripted plays, like your game plan. Yeah. This is your plan offensively. Yeah. And what were some of your issues? What are you seeing that's aggravating you?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't feel like that. You know, the other day you made it a point that you wanted the ball. And you brought up the way that the play. Now, they got.
Yeah, you win the coin toss. It's like, hey, let's go get a lead because we know we're front runners. We better have a lead. So let's get the ball and let's go do something with it. And they just peed down their leg.
They peed down their leg. They got penalties on the play. I mean, there were a lot of things that happened to them. But I just don't see. I just don't see them attacking the way they need to. To me, it's, you know, it's, and to me, if they would have come out the other day and got into just started the game in 2 minutes and just said, okay, we're going to attack, you know, and then you're trying to run the ball. You really can't run the ball. Now you're in some situations where you're behind the sticks. You're going to try and throw the waggle. You're lucky you get a defensive holding call to give you a first down on that, or that would have been
been one of the best plays of the year.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's I just don't where you should be an attacking style of an offense, they're not. And I just wonder if somebody over there would tell me if the head coach just does not have faith early in a game that his young offensive linemen are going to hold up. That maybe he gets into a game and he's kind of like feeling it out to see if his guys are going to have struggles. Because in the third and the fourth, they opened that thing up, but they were behind. But that's the kind of attitude they need to have. It's running three receivers on, running three receivers off, switching up the backs, throwing to the tight end, throw it to a back. Now throw, you know, don't just throw slants all day and think. Those are the plays they make. But they had some good pass plays in that third and fourth that were good routes. They created separation. They created opportunity. They played with some pace, some energy, some effort. You know, their pass blocking held up. Their backs held up. You know, when they had to run the ball, they were able to run the ball a little bit. They threw a screen. That worked. You know, that's where I would expect this to be with the receiver they have, the quarterback they have, the tight end they have. I expect that to be a little bit more. Yeah, Zeke is a liability. But what do? They took Zeke off the field in that third and fourth, and they went with Hunter Lipke. They went with Dowdle. They went with Vaughn. You know, take the negative players off the field and then go attack.
Yeah, well, one of the metrics that we have now is the quarterbacks on their first read. How often is your quarterback throwing it to his first read, and what type of production do you get from this? And I think this is certainly it's a quarterback stat to some extent, but I think this is a play caller's stat. This is an offense. What is your scheme? How is your scheme helping you? Because it's your first read. So how often is your quarterback seeing the first read and it's open? You designed it well. Hey, this is what we're trying to accomplish on this play. This is the guy I want you to throw it to. And then we'll go progression by progression here. And, you know, if that first guy is not open. For the Cowboys, Dak Prescott, there's only two quarterbacks in the league right now that are throwing to their first read more often. It's Trevor Lawrence and it's Daniel Jones. Okay, mm-hmm. So Dak is consistently throwing it to the guy that your offense has drawn it up for. The problem is there's only three quarterbacks in the league that have worse production on those plays. So you're consistently throwing it to the guy that your coach is telling you to throw it to because it's the first read, and you are getting some of the worst production on those plays.
You're getting what you want. The guy was actually open, and it's generating very little. That's, I would think, well done, Chief.
Well, because, I mean, you see it in the opening, in those first 15 plays, it's not checked down to the running back because right. My four receivers down the field weren't open, so I just had to get rid of the ball. They're throwing it to where our first read is our slow running back who we're not sure catches the ball very well, and we're going to throw it to him at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
That's your first read on a play. That's supposed to be a check down. And if it's not, it's got to be designed in a way where you've got a cavalcade of blockers out in front, and it's okay. We got a swing pass and we got 10 yards on it because that's about as most as you could hope for on a play like that. But you're getting back to the line of scrimmage because you're just having your aged running back run out into the flat, and that's your first read. So you're throwing it to your first read all the time, and you're getting no production out of it. That tells me your offense is just garbage.
Yeah, and it's predictable. You know, I think that's one of the main things is I often feel like the defense is just waiting for you to throw it short so they can rally to the football again and again and again. There's no imagination to get them running the way and then, you know, throwing it back. You don't threaten them enough with your running game to force them into, you know, a heavy box or, you know, needing to blitz you in a way that would allow you to take advantage over the top with a screen. There's not a lot going on. I don't know what the right answers are, Chief. I don't watch the film like Brian, but I believe the only thing they can do is try to throw it deeper and accept that the picks are going to come. We might have a game where there's three or four picks, but dang it, we got to try to throw in there and only have like one interception this game. That's how our offense could work.
I don't know if this helps the argument at all or it just something, but I was just looking at something in the matchup with Dak and the Giants and stuff. But this is something they kind of talk about with tight windows. And they say Dak, tight window on 35% of his pass attempts in week three. That's the highest rate in a game since week four of 2018 for him.
Wow.
Prescott struggled completing his tight window attempts against the Ravens. He was 5 of 18 for 66 yards. So
does remind me of the time before Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Prescott more than doubled his rate of open receiver targets in the fourth quarter, 33%, compared to 15% of open targets rate in the first three quarters of that game.
So that's guys getting more open.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they weren't playing prevent, but were they playing off coverage? Did they adjust anything?
They were bringing pressure. It was really, they were playing the same. It's like Dallas said, oh, we need to attack here. or we need to, oh, let's match up here. Because it wasn't CeeDee Lamb that was helping Nick. As I talked to you earlier, it was like, hey, wait a minute. We got Tolbert on this guy. We can. They kind of figured out who.
Turpin.
Yeah, they got Turpin. They got Washington, the safety, matched up against Turpin. You know, you could scheme that.
Right.
There's ways to scheme your guys open. And all of a sudden, I'm going, wow, look at this. You know, a route combination. All of a sudden, they're playing cover two, and the middle of the defense opens up because of a route combination. All of a sudden, maybe the guy, they jump Ferguson in a route, and that leaves Tolbert in the middle of the field where Dak just hits him for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, oh, wait, hey, they've got Turpin on the safety here. See, that's where I just don't understand how, and I'm a guy with a microphone here. That's all I am. I mean, I used to evaluate teams and pro personnel stuff. But I always look at matchups as like, who can I take advantage of? Who is the weak link of this group?
And they only started doing that in the fourth quarter?
It appeared to me that that's all of a sudden they figured out like, oh, wait a minute. Stevens can't cover very well. Let's target him. Oh, wait, they're going to put Washington on this guy? Let's go after this. And then the protection, the backs did a great job. The line did a great job. Dak was able to kind of manipulate, find where he wanted to go with the ball. They played with some pace. They had the Ravens on their heels a little bit. But it seems like everybody you play attacks your weakness. It's like you watch the tape and you're like going, oh, man, they knew something about you there.
Well, it's like the most elementary level of just football understanding.
I don't know how you go into games.
Taking advantage of what your team,
I don't know how.
Opposition doesn't do well.
Okay, for example, we talked about last week Falalele, the guard for the Ravens, not very quick-footed, big guy. What did they do? They put Micah Parsons on him, rushed him in the middle, got a pressure, incomplete pass. Okay, how hard?
Do it again.
How hard? I understand everybody else you play finds your players that are struggling in a game. And you don't do that nearly enough here. I don't think you take advantage of players on that they're maybe trying to hide. You know, maybe they're thinking like, oh, this guy's not a very good run defender. Oh, maybe this guy's not a little bit, maybe he doesn't play the pass very well. Like Flock, the corner for the Giants, number 28, if he has to play, I'm throwing every single ball at him because he is going to give it up. He's going to give up plays. He doesn't want to play tight. He doesn't want to play up on you. He doesn't want to be physical. So, hey, go after guys, but they won't. They'll go after the other guy. They'll go after Banks, and Banks likes to play tight. Now, he'll give up some plays, but find the guys that can't play. That's what bothers me so much about this offense. It's like we're just running plays. Like, oh, hey, let's run the waggle here. No, attack this corner over here that can't cover.
Mm-hmm.
Block it up, attack a corner. Attack a linebacker. Roquan Smith, he was struggling in coverage. You know, you look at the – he gave up over 100 yards of receptions in this game. How can Kansas City get him matched up in coverage? And we're just like, nah, we're not interested. We're not very interested. But he gives up plays. That just drives me nuts when I watch the Cowboys and what a struggle it is on offense. And other teams are just killing your defense. They're like, hey, their right ends can't play run defense here.
There is some optimism, in there. It's a great rant, Brian, by the way.
I'm sorry.
Tremendously informative. You know, I really like when
you
get into
that mode.
Do
you watch the games and feel like that like everybody else that plays offense against you has it pretty easy at times?
Yeah.
Where you're like, going, God, that was a good design right there.
Yeah.
You know, how do they all of a sudden figure out how to get a third team tight end on one of your players and it turns into a 37-yard gain or 36-yard gain? Or they get Nelson Aguilar now you have a missed tackle over there, but they got him on a rookie player and they throw him the ball. And now here we go.
Mm-hmm.
This game is about matchups and being able to take advantage of those. You know, what did the Saints do? They ran their fastest player through their safeties because they know neither one of these safeties could play the ball over their head. That's a matchup. What happens? That's 6, 70-yard pass play. You know, one play, 70 yards, 5-second drive time. Why? Because they said we're going to run this. We're going to run our fastest players on your safeties who can't turn and run.
Yeah, I do think in that fourth quarter when you talk about things getting better for them, it felt to me like they were actually running more routes where receivers were on the move, more yes. over routes, yes. more crossing routes. Yes. And
it opened up
exactly.
It opened up opportunities. The Texas routes, the screen routes. When I mean Texas, it's they go outside, you go inside, and you throw the ball underneath. Or it's put CeeDee Lamb in the backfield and throw it to him and let him gain 14 or 15 yards. You know, that was something that we don't see that. We don't see that.
Well, Brian, it sounds like there's, you know, if you had a different coaching staff, you believe this group of players could perform significantly better than what we've seen so far.
I just wonder how much.
I think offensively, yes. Defensively, yeah. I have more concerns.
Yeah, I think defensively, there's things that Zimmer can't do. You know, and I love Mike, and I think that Mike will tell you it ain't the players. Mike will take the heat on this one. You know, he'll take the blame that they're not playing good run defense right now. You know, but he can play a 5-2 when he's played 5-2 defense. His guys have played pretty well.
Yeah, but then you're susceptible in some other big ways and. You know, it's Band-Aids, and all of a sudden you're going to have other huge issues. But I'll tell you what, Rex Ryan, he is he's taking some shots. He's lashing out. He's pointing the finger.
He enjoys doing that for his brother, Rob.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think there's still some hard feelings there in the family.
We'll hear from Sexy Rexy a little bit later on in the program.
I love it. I love it. And I love Flagtober 2024, which will be underway Saturday morning, 9 a.m. You can get the whole schedule, 105thefan.com/events. Join us on Saturday and get your free 2024 Whataburger flag. This thing's iconic. It's going to be one of the best ever. And John Owning, Pro Football Focus, joins us next. We'll get his thoughts on what the Cowboys can do to adjust next.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Next to the nation. Welcome back, nation. Here we go. John Owning, Pro Football Focus, set to join you here on Home of the Cowboys. Talk about what's ailing this football team and if there's still reason for hope. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is hurt in an accident due to somebody's negligence, call the Frankels. Get your free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Go to frankelfirm.com. I hope you can join us in our Tour Day DFW on Saturday. We're coming to the Whataburger nearest you and giving you a free flag. You just got to check out the schedule on our socials. As joining us now from Pro Football Focus is one of our favorite football guests, John Owning, here in the nation. And a good evening, sir. How the heck are you?
Man, doing well. Really excited to talk some run defense, or maybe lack thereof, today.
Yeah, yeah. What have you been focusing on as far as what ails the Cowboys? What's the biggest point of emphasis for you?
I really think there's kind of two. I think there's one that I really, you know, everybody has been harping on. I've heard Brian and Zach and a lot of others in our Cowboys media space really harp on the execution. You know, there was, especially when you're talking about the, you know, the classic under center running plays, you know, plays where, you know, Mozzie Smith gets kindly escorted out of his gap. Yeah. Donovan Wilson just jumps out of his gap on another one that doesn't make sense. Overshown somehow blows up a block and misses a tackle at the same exact time. Those kind of plays. I think the missed tackles, obviously, was something that plagued the Cowboys extensively the last couple weeks. But I think one kind of execution error that not a lot of people are focusing on, but that it makes a huge difference, especially in a defense when they were playing so much single high. I think they played 73% of their snaps against the Baltimore Ravens came from single high, so they were kind of loading the box trying to stop the run. But when you're loading the box and trying to stop the run, you have to do good with your fallback principles. And what I'm talking about fallback principles is when an offense brings a blocker from one side to the other post-snap, it takes away a gap from the side that he was aligned on, and it adds a gap to the side that he's coming post snap. So, for example, say an offense is in a classic, you know, shotgun set. They have they're in 11 personnel, so three receivers on the field, one tight end, one running back. Say they're the running back is running shotgun to the quarterback's left. There's a tight end aligned, you know, on the line of scrimmage, or maybe in a wing set to the right of the formation. So to the defense's left, there's going to be four gaps. There's going to be A, B, C, and the D gap pre-snap. Mm-hmm. And then to the defense's right, which is the weak side, there's going to be three gaps. There's going to be an A, B, and C gap. But what happens when that offense brings that tight end from the strong side to the quote-unquote pre-snap weak side is it takes away a gap. So now on what was the defense's, on the defense's left, which was the strong side, there is now only three gaps. There's an A, B, and a C gap, whereas now on the pre-snap weak side, it is now the strong side post-snap. So there's an A, B, C, and a D gap there. And so you need to account for that somehow. And one way you have to do that is you have to have your linebackers fall back a gap. So they were filling four gaps on that play side pre-snap. Post-snap, they only have, you know, maybe there's only three gaps there now, so they have to fall back their gaps towards the post-snap strong side. So if they don't do that, it leaves them a gap down. There's going to be two people on the defense's left that are going to be in the same gap, and that means there's going to be a vacated gap on the defense's right post-snap. And I think that's something that the Cowboys linebacking group in particular has consistently gotten wrong over the past couple years, and it's made the Cowboys defenses kind of unsound. And I think that kind of execution errors is kind of why you see running backs find free daylight when they cut back so consistently against the Cowboys defense. And I think that's something that's really hurt them. But another thing I wanted to focus on is, especially against the Ravens, is the Cowboys defending the quarterback-centric run game. You know, when especially against someone like Lamar Jackson, who is so athletic and so fast, the thing that people don't realize is when you're playing – a single high defense, the reason why you're doing it is because you're going to load the gap and have one defender in the box for each gap that is created by the offense. But that is done under the auspices that the quarterback is not going to be involved in the run game. Because when the quarterback gets involved in the run game, what was once defense was cleanly had a man for every gap. Now that the quarterback is running the ball, it adds a gap that the defense has to cover. So that means that the defense is now going to be one gap down from what they should have been, from what they would have been if the quarterback wasn't involved. So that means you have to have the safety, the deep safety insert into the run game. But when you're playing single high shells, the safety is so far deep, he's 15 to 18 yards in the middle of the field. He's not in a place where he can insert into the run game quickly enough to be able to make an impact. And that's why you saw Lamar Jackson, when they were bringing that tight end across the formation and adding a blocker to the QB read side, it was creating situations where the Cowboys would have only one defender over there, and that defender was already accounted for by the blocker. They were a man down. And I think that a lot of that comes from is Mike Zimmer's kind of, for lack of a better term, stubbornness to play single high gapped out defense. Now, what you're seeing a ton of teams do nowadays is they're going to play split safeties in those situations. Now, people think because you're playing split safeties, you're inviting them to run the ball and you're not in a position to be able to defend the run. But you're in a much more, even though you're in not as good of a position to defend the run, quote unquote, because you have less people available in the box, there are things you can do like playing gap and a half if you're in an even man front, or playing two gap if you're in an odd man front, to kind of make up for the lack of defenders that you have in the box. But what you do have is you have two safeties that are aligned much closer to the line of scrimmage, and they have much better leverage to perimeter runs. That's why when you see teams play a lot of too high, they play spill defense, which means they're trying to string everything towards the sideline so that those safeties can insert into the run and make it much more sound. And that's what you have to do against the QB run game. That's why you see defenses in colleges, obviously the hash marks play a big part into it.
Yeah.
But you play split safeties because you can have those safeties insert into the run and account for the QB in those zone read, those power read, those bash runs, you know, those things that create such big plays when you see these defenses playing those classic single high cover one, cover three defenses. It's like the Cowboys were playing. But the Cowboys just, I don't think they had the tools. They were consistently outgassed against those QB runs with Lamar Jackson, and that's why you consistently saw the Baltimore Ravens get whatever they wanted. Anytime they went to a zone read with Lamar Jackson, they were creating big explosive gains, and that's because they were stubbornly hanging out in single high, not giving their defense the tools, in my opinion, to be able to adequately defend those plays.
John, so a lot of it, just you're thinking they get outflanked in a way. Mm-hmm. And then, how do you account for when you get, say, edges that play like that crash technique where all of a sudden Micah and Tank and those guys are going, I was thinking, where's the replacement player, or the fill player there? So that would be your safety if you sat there in cover two then, right? That would be your...
would be similar that the linebacker is going to have to scrape.
Yeah.
But now when he's scraping, he's going to have a player to his outside so that they can create a vice on the ball carrier.
Right.
So if you have a blocker, you have, depending on who the blocker is going to take, if he takes the safety that's coming down the fill, the safety is going to play with outside leverage on that block and funnel Lamar Jackson inside to that linebacker. Whereas if that tight end takes, Kendricks, Kendricks is going to take on the block with inside leverage so that he funnels Lamar Jackson to Donovan Wilson. Now, obviously, it creates a one-on-one tackling situation in the open field against Lamar Jackson. It's not ideal, but it's really the best you can ask for in those situations when you're playing, all your players you're so concerned about the downhill running game and stretch running game of Derrick Henry and Justin Hill, and your defensive tackles aren't doing a good job. So you have so much of your personnel inside. If getting a one-on-one unblocked defender against Lamar Jackson is really the best that you can ask for.
Yeah, see, what I've also noticed too, and I know you watched the tape, and I see Dallas just trying like hell because they've been beaten up so bad on the edges that they've got everybody trying to run to the ball, and then that has allowed some cutback lanes to be pretty prevalent for them.
100%. And that's why I kind of think Zimmer's kind of game plan that he created against the Baltimore Ravens were providing answers to the problems that the Cowboys found against the week before.
The Saints.
And they weren't against the Saints. But they weren't adequately enough addressing the problems that the Baltimore Ravens uniquely can create.
Yeah.
So I think that was something that I think Zimmer was kind of going into, we've been having so much trouble defending these box runs, these zone stretches, these inside zone plays, these gap plays. We're just going to throw personnel in there. And to be honest, the week before, Lamar Jackson, I think, only had two or three designed runs. So he was probably thinking, they're not going to – this early in the season, they maybe won't try to get Lamar Jackson exposed to that much punishment, that much physicality. So he was kind of banking on hoping that the Baltimore Ravens weren't going to do that. But obviously, we saw from almost the jump that Ravens were going to have Lamar Jackson be a big point of their running game, especially because they were 0-2 going into this kind of must-win game.
Talking Cowboys with John Owning here on The Fan. When you look at this Cowboys offense right now, John, what do you see? What is the most frustrating? Is it the rushing attack? Is it the bad route concepts? I mean, what is the offense doing to you right now as you look at it?
I mean, honestly, the offense reminds me a ton of what we saw the first 6 weeks of last year before the bye week. Really unimaginative route concepts and passing concepts. We saw the thing is, people are saying they're not using like shifts or motions, but they are, but they're not with enough urgency that create those voids in a defense. They're kind of just, jogging to their place, getting set up, using shifts. Even when they're using motion at the snap, it's not like the urgency that you see like the 49ers use it with, or the Dolphins use it with, or the Packers use it with, these teams that are so good, so prolific offensively when they're totally healthy. And it's because that they're doing these things that are manipulating the defense quickly with their fastest players, and that's creating voids, it's creating communication errors, and it's making easy offense for their quarterback. And that's the problem that the running backs in the running game, and that's the thing that the Cowboys aren't doing offensively schematically, is they're not giving Dak or Rico or Zeke these easy button wins that the other elite offenses are consistently doing.
We love how you break down football, John. Thank you so much for your time, and enjoy week four.
Hey, appreciate you guys. Hopefully next week it'll be a lot happier than it is this week.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt, dude. We could use it, especially against this Giants team. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
John Owning, Pro Football Focus here in the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Jive with what you're seeing, Brian. Let's find out more.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, he was, and John's excellent at what he does. I just felt like, too, he's right about the flanking, outflanking in some of the ways where, you know, the edges and stuff just haven't been good enough, but they're winning so quickly on the outside. And what John's talking about with the gapping, the spacing and all that, I mean, it could kind of give you a tired head a little bit, but everything about it is that when you're running the ball on the edges, you know, you're trying to win. And if you can do it by, you know, by spacing or by having extra blockers there, it's always going to be something that that the offense is going to strive to try and do.
What do you have coming up next in the corner?
I'm going to talk about the New York Giants defense, and we'll do that next.
My three-year-old loves this song. I don't know how she's been listening to it, but she will now request it.
She's like an Eurythmics fan?
She knows a lot of the lyrics to it.
Does she
which
really?
Is kind of unsettling at times, but... Yeah, you know, it's the jam. I believe it is a National One Hit Wonder Day. I don't know if Eurythmics are one of those, but it's got those kind of 80s One Hit Wonder vibes.
Oh, no, the Eurythmics, I think they had a few more hits than, like, say, like A-ha or, you know, one of those groups or something like that.
Yeah.
That was the...
And here comes the rain again.
Falling on my face like a memory. Yeah.
I love Broadus Karaoke.
Oh, man.
Krusty's Corner is brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Yeah. Here's the king.
Thank you very much, General. Appreciate it. Thank you, John Owning, too, for coming on.
Outstanding report.
Man, I mean, he can explain a little gap defense for you a little bit. I like that.
I think that was the longest answer we've had since PJ Carlissima.
It was.
Yeah, for
it
sure.
It was long, but...
He was on his Vince Lombardi chalkboard, I think.
Was.
I could hear him.
We have a seal here, and we're going to run the ball, you know. That's,
you got to go back to the pre-snap strong side.
Yeah. It could be a little difficult talking about strong and weak side.
He's got to do it with a drink in his hand, like Coach JB.
Yeah.
And drop a few F-bombs. We got
a fresh gin and tonic right here.
Maybe
so I cuss out these running backs.
Lucius, can you tell it's a drink?
I mean, yeah, you can tell. You know, I mean, how people hold it, their pinky is always up. Yeah. You know how people, when they drink a drink, they drink it by the top of it when there's some alcohol in it.
Like a lot of ice and a lot of...
you can tell.
Like a lime
shaking
floating
it
around.
A little bit. You know what I mean?
Because I tell you, these moms have figured out these Yeti cups, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
These moms will show up with these Yetis. They've figured them out.
Yeah, you can tell because they don't put them down next to them. They hold them the whole time. There's alcohol in there.
They're like, hey, mom,
I'm learning you don't have to be that wary of the early morning Yeti. It's the late afternoon.
The late afternoon.
Which probably started as an early morning Yeti.
Tournament.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's got that bottle of Chardonnay in there. She keeps filling it back up.
Yeah. The late games can get spicy.
Start off with a Bloody Mary or maybe...
Come on, Blue!
Yeah, gotta love that. Gotta love it. All right, the Giants defensively. We'll get into this a little bit. They've got some questions in their secondary. We've mentioned that Adoree Jackson, who's been playing as a backup corner for them, he's had to play a little bit more because Nick McLeod, who is their starter at left corner, has been dealing with a knee injury. He hurt the knee in the Minnesota game, which was Week 1. He's missed the last two games. But Nick should be back in action, so that means they get one of their starters back. But they lose Adoree, and they lose Drew Phillips, who is a very talented rookie nickel player from Kentucky. He's a little bit smaller guy. Was third-round selection by the Giants. Kind of felt like that maybe he should have been selected a little bit higher. But they had this draft was really deep with a lot of really quality cornerbacks and you know, people probably didn't fall in love with his size and all that, but they lost a big player there. So now it's going to be where to see.
This is where you want to take advantage, right? There's a matchup.
There's a couple different ways you could play this thing, and the one way you can do it, and this is going to be LSU crime on LSU crime right here, is that with Cordell Flott, who is number 28, is one of their corners, and when he plays, he is not as physical, nor is he as aggressive as what you get, say, when Deontay Banks or even with Nick McLeod and Phillips and guys like that. So the Cowboys would do themselves well if they could find a way to get the ball in the direction and match up as much as they can with number 28, Cordell Flott. That's the guy that I feel like if you could go after, you can make some plays against him. Banks... People have kind of gone after Banks on the other side. He was a first-round pick in 2023. People have gone after him a little bit, but he's more willing to play you tough, be up on you, be more competitive. So that's maybe you want to stay. If you're not interested in making some tight window throws, you go to the other side there. But try and find number 28 if you can. What you have to be worried about the secondary, though, is they have a very talented blitzer in Jason Pinnock. And he plays usually as the free safety. He wears number 27. He's tied actually with the team lead with sacks. And it's so funny with this team when you figured that you've got Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau, that those two would be the leaders in sacks. But no, it's Dexter Lawrence. And, you know, so got to be careful about when 27 gets around the line of scrimmage, he's likely going to be coming on a blitz. And so the running backs, we saw a really nice job with last week with Dowdle, with Hunter Lipke, those kinds of guys picking up blitzes, and hopefully that they are well aware of Jason Pinnock. And then also, too, linebacker Micah McFadden is another guy that kind of blitzes and has had some pressure. So if the Giants are going to bring pressure, that's probably where it's going to come from, in that either the secondary or that linebacker pressure. Now, I mentioned about I talked about Brian Burns and I talked about Thibodeau, you know, two very talented edge players. You know, Dallas is going to have their hands full, especially if you look at where, you know, Guyton was much better later in that game. He was really much better last week when it came to the feet and the hands. They're going to flip Thibodeau and Burns to each side. So they're going to try and find ways to take advantage of you with their edge rushers. So both when you start talking about with Guyton and Steele, need to be ready for Thibodeau and Burns, because those are going to be their two pressure players on the edge.
Those guys could get you.
Those guys can get you. And the thing about Thibodeau and Burns, both, they could break you down. And when we saw last week when Guyton gets in trouble is when he doesn't move his feet. Hmm. As long as he can move his feet, he's got the length and the reach to kind of keep these guys at arm's length and also keep them away from the play. Another road game for him here. You know, he hadn't had a road game since week one. Crowd's going to be into it, I'm sure. You know, he's got to be able to get off on the snap count. Feet, hands are going to be important for working against both of these guys, because those guys can get to the edge on him. The biggest matchup is going to be inside. It's going to be how you deal with Dexter Lawrence. And Dexter Lawrence is a guy that, he's
probably best in the league.
Big and fast.
He's big and he is fast and he's powerful and he will walk your center directly back into the pocket. And there were several times in these games I've been watching, you know, with the Vikings in week one, the Commanders in week two, and especially with the Browns in week three. He will just take your center and walk him, push him straight back into the quarterback. And the one thing we've seen with Dak Prescott is he's very much on board with going forward in the pocket and throwing these balls. So, you know, Cooper Beebe is going to have.
Yeah, how's he doing so far?
Yeah, Cooper Beebe.
Can he handle power?
Yeah, the thing that Cooper Beebe is a strong guy. This guy has a different level of strength you're about to block. So Cooper can sit down. He's got some power in his lower body, his upper body power. He's a shorter guy, can kind of handle that. But where he's probably going to need some help is he's going to need some help from Martin, and he's going to need a little help from Smith if they can do that. Now, I'll say this. Nunes Roaches is the other defensive tackle. I think that Elijah Chapman, who's a rookie, number 94, is a better player right now than Nunes Roaches. So 94, 97 inside. How the Cowboys block with Smith, how they block with Martin, how they block with Beebe, they need to try and control the middle of this defense the best they can. There are going to be some issues probably on the outside, on the edges. Hopefully your backs can help you with that. Maybe your tight ends can help you with some stuff. But they've got to make sure that they control the front of this pocket if they can, because they can take advantage of this Giants secondary if they can get the ball off. That's going to be the key in this. But, running the football on these guys, it could be a little bit difficult just because of it. If you're going to try and run it on the interior, it's Lawrence just can just wreck shop that way. Burns, Thibodeau, kind of get up the field. Maybe you can get inside of them and have some ability. So I think it's going to be, if you're going to try and run the ball, it needs to be a little bit more on the edges than it does inside, because these guys are going to be problematic with having to block that that Dexter Lawrence.
I mean, if you want to get the good out of Terrence Steele, you got to get this run game going because he's turning into. Now, what do you think about his matchup? Could this be an exposed weekend again for Steele?
It's going to be very tough because Thibodeau will be to his side or Burns will be to his side, as I mentioned. And what these guys do is they have the ability to break you down. And if they know that they could take you inside on the rush, I think that's where. This is where, you know,
everybody's got to know that in the league by now,
right? We talked about yesterday about with the Giants and Andrew Thomas and the problems he has. He sets wide inside rush, And that's how you attack guys like that. And what Steele has shown is that you could go over the top of him and get to the quarterback. I mean, anything inside, anything wide, he's pretty good at just keeping you wide and making sure that Dak has that ability to step up. But it's the inside pressure, and if Burns and Thibodeau both are watching tape and know, because you saw him give up a couple of sacks week one, week two, those inside pressure is a problem, and I guarantee you you're gonna see that from these two guys against him.
We're gonna get open this week though. Guys are gonna be open downfield.
You got a shot. You got a shot to get open because, like I say, I think that Banks will play a little bit more physical. I'll be interested to see how McLeod plays you coming off the knee injury. But if somehow this turns into that Flock is in that mix, wherever he's lined up, that's where the ball needs to go. If somehow he is in the slot, we'll see how they play around Drew Phillips being out of this game. But that's a big loss for them.
They got anybody for Fergie?
Well, they're going to try. I think what they're going to try and do is you've got Pinnock is going to try and blitz. Tyler Newbin is a rookie. He was a second year player out of Minnesota. He's got some physicality the way he plays. He's got some size to him. He's about 6'1" and a half. I've seen him cover pretty well. I've seen him play at depth at Minnesota. I've seen him do some things where the ball comes underneath. He does a really good job of driving on it. You guys remember, and I don't know how much they might use. You remember Isaiah Simmons? It was a first round pick for Arizona,
Clemson,
and they didn't know if he was going to play safety or he was going to play linebacker.
I don't think they do. I still don't think they know.
They still don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if Isaiah Simmons, number 19, gets some work there. But I have a feeling that Tyler Newbin, or they're going to try and do something with one of these linebackers. Maybe Micah McFadden, if he's not blitzing, maybe they'll try and put a linebacker on Ferguson. But Ferguson's had some really good games against the Giants in the past.
Yeah, Ferguson and Lamb should be cleaning up in a game like this.
You hope if you could get them everybody to hold up front and you don't give up any pressures, especially through the middle of the pocket. There's some plays to be made here.
Krusty's Corner brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
What's in store next, Chief?
We got a little college football hump day darty, new developments for the Broke Boys out west, and we start peeking ahead at Bama and Georgia next year in the nation.